This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Coming up in the next half hour, Dave Wyman will drop by for his weekly visit. We'll talk about that Super Bowl. And we got other stuff to talk with Dave about. All kinds of important issues that we'll cover with Dave Wyman. Now, 1 hour into a three-hour show, Nicole, have I assuaded your worst fears?
No. That doesn't happen until the last segment. Well,
what do you mean?
You make me on edge the whole show.
I think I've handled things very, very well so far.
Yes, so far
I think it's
so
been
good,
a fine show.
I will be on edge the whole show.
Okay, Nicole is referencing the fact that, and this happens to me every once in a while, and it gets tougher and tougher. I didn't sleep last night, so I sent Nicole a text at about, 3:30, 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
And I just said, hey, I just sent an email for tomorrow's show, but I'm not even close to falling asleep. And then I think I dozed for about an hour this morning. Mm-hmm. And you were all nervous that I was going to sound all goofy on the air today.
Well, you didn't sleep a lot the night before either, and so... Yeah, you never know. I never know what I'm going to get on nights where you go sleepless. And I'm always trying to make some correlation. Like, what do you have going on that makes you not sleep? And part of it, I know you had a meeting this morning at 8. And when you schedule yourself a meeting that early, which makes it so that even if you did fall asleep late, you wouldn't be able to sleep. I feel like that's one of your triggers.
Yeah, I don't like having meetings. I had an 8 o'clock meeting this morning. And then I have a 3 o'clock meeting right after the show, and then a long meeting at 3:30 this afternoon. So anytime I jam up my schedule, I start stressing about that. But anyway, enough about me. I'm fine.
I'm always interested. Yeah. I always keep an eye on the text to see when listeners start to realize that's what's going on, because they typically do.
No, because I'm fine today. And now you're going to get them. You're going to plant this idea
in
their heads. Well, I know, but since you said what you just said, now they're going to start texting just to try to validate you. But I'm going to be fine. I'm going to make it to the finish line. No problem whatsoever.
Okay.
On that, you have my solemn word. Okay, let's get into this Fastest 15 here. It's, as I said, a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. So, Lorena Gonzalez, Seattle City Councilwoman, she wants to be the mayor of Seattle. Now, there's just one problem. The mayor is going to have to deal with this defunding police thing, because there are still activists that want to cut the Seattle Police Department by 50%. And indeed, this is an example of just how screwed up some people in politics are. So when Lorena Gonzalez was on the Seattle City Council, which she still is, but she was this activist. Yes, let's defund the police. Let's bring in those social workers. Here's what she told Cairo 7 a few months ago.
Now is the time to divest from the police department.
Let's divest. Let's cut ourselves loose from the police department. That's what she had to say as a councilwoman to, have the radicals want to vote for her. Now she's running for mayor. So what does she say now? Well, Brandy Cruz at Q13 asked her essentially the same question.
Do you still believe that you can achieve a 50% reduction in SPD's budget?
You know, after doing all of the analysis that we did last year, I think it would be extremely difficult to achieve a 50% reduction in this.
Listen, what analysis? A year ago, or in the mid part of last year, you wanted to divest from the police department. And now, because you're running for mayor, that's the only thing that changed. There's no new analysis. Like all politicians, Lorena Gonzalez bends and twists with the wind. A mayor has to be somewhat more responsible. So now she's saying, yeah, we can't do the 50%. When she was a council person, she could be a radical. And this is why I can't stand politics. Because politicians have no center. They have no compass, morally or in any other way. And they're willing to help destroy the city if that'll help them politically. They'll say, hey, you know what? Let's not destroy the city, if that will now help them politically. And I'm tired of these people who have absolutely no core values, like Lorena Gonzalez.
Do you still believe that you can achieve a 50% reduction in SPD's budget?
You know, after doing all of the analysis that we did last year, I think it would be extremely difficult to achieve a 50% reduction in the Seattle Police Department's budget. I think that there are still opportunities to make the police department more efficient and effective and get them focused on true core law enforcement functions. But we need to keep doing our analysis.
Yeah, but you were all for it not that long ago. Politicians have no moral compass whatsoever. Next up in the Fastest 15. So we played you part of this soundbite yesterday. We actually have a little bit more today. The president of the United States, we told you for the last few years that Joe Biden's kind of a creeper. There are those videos where he's sniffing little girls' hair as their daddies and mommies are being sworn into the Senate. And he even had to have a press conference last year and say, yeah, I'm too handsy, I'm too grabby, I hug people too much, I say the wrong things. I play this because, to me, this is a sign of somebody who's slipping. Because he's just said, I can't be so disrespectful of women. And so yesterday, a nurse, a veteran nurse, she's been a nurse for 9 years, so she must be at least 30 years old. She's giving Joe Biden a virtual tour of a vaccination site in Arizona. And you can tell that Joe isn't even paying attention to one word that she's saying. He just wants to know how old she is. This is really creepy.
Well, support. Yeah.
Are you a freshman at the university?
No, no. <I'm teasing.
laughs> You look like a freshman.
Well, thank you.
No, thank you for what you're doing.
That's great. Thank you so very much.
Okay, then Kamala Harris jumps in. That's great. And then Kamala starts talking because she knows what a creeper the president sounds. Just that laugh. I'm teasing. You freshman? Huh? You're not a freshman?
You're doing it, and you're making a huge difference, and you are inspiring all of us. So thank you for...
So Kamala tries to get the save, but then Joe jumps in again after Kamala's through talking.
Everything you are doing, it really does matter in such a big way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you a nurse?
I am. I'm a nurse. I'm an RN. I've been an RN for about 9 years now.
Well, I know, having been a significant consumer of health care, I can tell, I know the vice president knows this when I say it. Doctors let you live. Nurses make you want to live. If there's any angels in heaven, they're all nurses, male and female. And that's not an exaggeration.
That's right.
That's the God's truth. Thank you for all you do.
Okay. He's just repeating lines. This is what he said in 2013.
People go where the need is. Almost every doctor or nurse I've ever known, if there's any angels in heaven, by the way, they're all nurses. This is speaking of a guy with two craniotomies because of aneurysm, one embolism. Doctors allow you to live. Nurses make you want to live. And I don't... No. They make male nurses and female nurses.
What? Why does he have to stress male nurses and female nurses make you want to live? He didn't know this 8 years ago. He didn't know why people were laughing at that line. And that's when he thought, well, I'll say male nurses too. The whole thing was very, very creepy. And if you saw how Kamala Harris, she was worried when he started asking her if she was a college freshman, and now she's a 9-year veteran. And then when he started talking the second time, you even hear Kamala in the background go, kind of like, let's rush this along now. So that's Joe with the nurse. Then you have his presidential press secretary, Jen Psaki. She was talking about, she was at a briefing room press conference, and Peter Doocy with Fox News, he asked her about the 11,000 good-paying union jobs that were wiped out on Joe Biden's first couple of days when he canceled the Keystone Pipeline. 1,000 jobs were gone that day. 10,000 more jobs, according to the union, were gone. And man, she got snide because Peter Doocy said, hey, where are those 11,000 people? You keep talking about these energy jobs, but I'm serious. Where do they go to get these energy jobs since you just canceled their jobs? Listen to how snide the White House spokesperson is about working men and women.
That the Biden administration is going to let the thousands of fossil fuel industry workers, whether it's pipeline workers or construction workers, who are either out of work or will soon be out of work because of a Biden EO, when it is and where it is that they can go for their green job. And that is something the administration has promised. There is now a gap. So I'm just curious when that happens, when those people can count on that.
Well, I'd certainly welcome you to present your data of all the thousands and thousands of people who won't be getting a green job. Maybe next time you're here, you can present that.
But you said that they would be getting green jobs, so I'm just asking when that happens. Richard Trumka, who is a friend, longtime friend of Joe Biden, says about that day one Keystone EO, he says, I wish he, the president, had paired that more carefully with the thing that he did second by saying, here's where we are creating the jobs. So there's partial evidence from Richard Trumka.
Well, you didn't include all of his interview. Would you like to include the rest?
So how about this? The Laborers International Union of North America said the Keystone decision will cost 1,000 existing union jobs and 10,000 projected construction jobs.
Well, what Mr. Trumka also indicated in the same interview was that President Biden has proposed a climate plan with transformative investments in infrastructure and laid out a plan that will not only create millions of good union jobs, but also help.
She just starts reading some prepared statement. But they are so cavalier about taking away someone's livelihood. They're telling these welders and construction workers, just go build solar panels. Just go build wind turbines. Well, it's not that easy to uproot your family and to learn a new trade and to come in at the very bottom of that new trade if you'd risen to the top of some other trade. But they are taking these good-paying blue-collar jobs, tradespeople, and they are just wiping out these jobs. And then they have a snide tone when asked about it. I mean, talk about not caring about the working people. And then there's one other interesting thing at this White House press briefing. The confirmation that if there's an illegal alien in this country who rapes somebody or commits horrible drug crimes, the Biden administration will not deport criminal illegal aliens.
And there's some new reporting that ICE is going to get some new guidance to no longer focus on deporting illegal immigrants who have been convicted of DUI, simple assault, solicitation, drug-based crimes, among other things. And I'm curious how that is in the interest of public safety.
Well, first, it's guidelines that would be put out by the Department of Homeland Security, and I'd certainly send you them. They have a confirmed secretary now, but the priority for the enforcement of immigration laws will be on those who are posing a national security threat, of course, a public safety threat, and on recent arrivals. Nobody is saying that DUIs or assault are acceptable behavior, and those arrested for such activity should be tried and sentenced as appropriate by local law enforcement.
By local law enforcement, but they will not be deported. So that is the new policy, and that is not in the interest of public safety to say that people who run drug gangs or commit assaults, that they will not be deported anymore by the United States of America. It is a horrible direction that we're taking. And you combine this national policy with what's been going on here in the Puget Sound area with politicians who are turning criminals loose left and right. It's a pretty sad state of affairs. Meanwhile, Van Jones, the Trump-hating commentator on CNN. But here's the thing about Van Jones. When Donald Trump did something that helped the African-American community, Van Jones would say that on CNN. He would say, well, he did drive down black unemployment to record lows. He helped create more jobs for African-Americans. He supported historically black colleges and universities. He did the sentencing reform. And so when Donald Trump did something that was good for black Americans, Van Jones would say that. Well, I tell you what, Van Jones went on The View and he got ambushed because he occasionally, even though he was, you know, by and large, a Donald Trump basher, he would also point out the good things that Trump would do. And here he is talking to Anna Navarro. Listen to how long this question is. You want to know the sure sign of a horrible interviewer? It's if they ask a question that lasts more than about 10 or 15 seconds.
Van, look, you know, I lost a lot of Republican followers and people who trusted me in the Republican Party because of the positions I took against Trump. And Sonny is right. You've lost a lot of people who trusted you and who saw you as a voice because of the positions you took during Trump. And in 2016, you and I were probably the two most vocal critics of Trump during the campaign on CNN, to the point where it was reported that Jared Kushner went in.
Can we get to the question,
in
please?
And met with executives at our parent company and asked that you and I be fired. And then, you know, all of a sudden you show up working with a nepotism Barbie and nepotism Ken, and you work and showing up, you know, in pictures with Eric Trump and with Candace Owens.
Please get to the question.
People who wonder, and I'm one of them, how did that evolution happen? How did you go from being this very principled critic of the Trump administration, as I was, to all of a sudden being in the White House celebrating them with them and being, you know,
question,
taking
please.
Posing for pictures with Candace Owens? I mean, can you explain the evolution to people who are puzzled by it?
There's no evolution. When Obama was in office, I was working with Newt Gingrich. I was working with Republicans then to get people out of prison.
Okay. And Donald Trump got people out of prison. She spent a minute 10 asking the question. And then one of her other co-hosts, Sonny Hostin, also ambushed Van Jones because he said, yeah, I can't stand the guy, but he did some really good things for the black community. And they hate him for that now. Complete ambush job on The View. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Dave Wyman drops by for his regular Tuesday visit. We'll do that coming up as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
America.
Wow, Dave.
I was going to say Janet Jackson because she sampled from this America song. That's the America version?
She did not.
It is, yeah.
Yes, she did. Sean, will you find the Janet Jackson song?
Yeah.
Samples from this song?
I can do that.
What do you mean she did not, Dave? Are you challenging me?
Yeah, I'm going to challenge you. My win, I'll put my win up against it, so it'll be 0-0.
Okay, it's a Janet Jackson song, Sean. It's something like Wanna Be
Your
Lover.
Oh, yeah, I found it. It's called Someone to Call My Lover. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right.
Listen to this, Dave Wyman.
All right, here we go.
You're just playing the same song.
That's what you think.
Let it go. Let it go. Oh, is that America there, Dave?
Is that Janet Jackson?
Yes, it is. Sampling yes. America. Dory is smart.
All right, we're 0-0 then. I put my win up against it.
Well, wait, doesn't that mean it's 1-0? Don't I get your win?
No.
Didn't you give your
I canceled it out with my win. I said I'll risk part my of, win. I lost my win.
Part of cancel culture.
It goes. That's right.
Okay. So how much of these Russell Wilson interviews today did you hear? Have you heard all of them?
Yeah, I've heard a number of them, but you can play whatever you want.
Okay, so walk me through this. So he sounds a little disgruntled with the Seahawks, and he did interviews with a CBS guy, Jason Lucanfora. He also did the Dan Patrick show. And among other things, he said that he thinks that management should talk to people like him even.
For me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved because at the end of the day, it's your legacy. It's your team's legacy. It's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, those guys you got to trust. You know, when you think about, you know, one of the reasons why Tom went to Tampa was because he felt like he could trust those guys and Bruce was going to give him the opportunity. I think for me, you know, anytime you bring free agents in, you know, other players, you want the best players, guys who love the game, guys who want to be a part of that. And as a player, you kind of know that. You get to be around Pro Bowls. You kind of build that over time and get to see who can really play. You know, as a player, you really know. So I think that relationship's really key in that dialogue.
Okay, there are two things there. I'm going to just cut that off. So he wants them to talk to him about signing free agents. And he said, he made a comparison, it sounds, between himself, maybe, and Tom Brady, who left the Patriots to go play for Tampa Bay. What are your thoughts on both those things?
Well, what I hear is that he feels like he can do the job that John Schneider does, and that players right. are the ones that know. So I don't think that's the case. So, you know, not every offseason, but it seems like in the offseason – I think a lot of it's his agent, Mark Rogers, that, you know, wants him to put things out there like that. But I mean, that's what you're saying. You're saying that you got a better handle on right. how to evaluate talent. And look, I am not mad at Russell. I think he's the greatest, but I just think a little bit off base, maybe getting some bad advice here. But, you know, look, yeah, you can tell sometimes when you're on the field with a guy. But, I mean, it's about getting him there first and then, you know, how much money you pay him. And then, you know, and then the other thing is he talking about his offensive line? So, I mean.
Well, I have that here. Here he is more specifically talking about his offensive
line. Sometimes you hold on to it a little bit, you know, just because you're looking for that play and you find those guys, but also so many times it turns into touchdowns too. You know, you never want to be sacked that many times, you know, 400 times up basically is way too many, 400 too many. You know, so I think that's a big thing that we got to fix. That's got to be fixed, you know, and has to be, you know, at the end of the day, because my goal is to play, you know, 10 to 15 more years. And so when you think about that and longevity and legacy and all that, And you watched the game the other night, you know, the difference between that game was Tom was taking shots down the field and getting the ball, you know, to his guys and stuff like that. But
okay, so I'm not going to play all of these because yeah. I want to hear you talking about it. But he says essentially that he doesn't have the protection he wants and it's got to get better.
Well, and he said sometimes you hold on to the ball there, and he does. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have it any other way, though. That's the way that he should be because it's called the cost of doing business. You know, Russ is going to take sacks. You know, he had twice as many as Mahomes in the regular season with 52. So yeah, some of those are on him, and that's fine. I'm fine with him taking that risk. That's how he makes his plays. So, but, you know, they traded for Dwayne Brown. They drafted Damian Lewis. They really liked what they got from Brandon Shell. I'm not sure what's going on at center, if that's the best, you know, if they went and got him a center, maybe, you know, a guy that is a Pro Bowl. You know, and that's the thing I was thinking about, like Max Unger's the last like true center that they've had. I mean, Justin Britt was good, but he was a tackle, then a guard. And then, you know, Posick's been guard and center. So, you know, and then they had Patrick Lewis in there at one point and some other ones. So maybe a center, that's fine. But I just, you know, suggesting that you need to be part of the process, You know, and I'm look, everybody's, don't you just stay in your lane. Why are you telling the guys to do that? Well, look, that's how you got there. It's the equivalent, almost the equivalent to me of an owner trying to come in and say, hey, this is the guy I want and this is the guy I want. You know, no, you hire people to go do that and do what they do expertly, which is what John Schneider has done. He's done an amazing job getting this team together. Every one of their rookies except one played last year, and two were, you could argue three or four were significant contributors. And, you know, you went and got Jamal Adams. You know, you went and got a whole bunch of offensive linemen. And, you know, and everybody wants to go back and go, well, they didn't hit on this guy and that guy and everything. Well, every team goes through that. You know, we're only looking at, you know, what was with the Luke Jokel thing, who was a tackle. I mean, yeah, that didn't work out. So, I mean, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But I just don't see, to me, that it sounds like Russ wants to be part of the, you know, the management and the scouts.
Right. Well, and here's one more. And this is the first time I've ever heard him suggest that he, you know, is thinking about leaving Seattle. But he said that he's sure that the Seahawks have gotten trade inquiries about him.
Yeah, I definitely believe they've gotten calls for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, I think anytime you're a player that tries to produce every week and has done it for, you know, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. But I think also, I think more than anything else is, you know, I think at the end of the day, you want to win. You know, you play this game every day to wake up to win. You play this game, you know, to be the best in the world. You know, what I hate? I hate sitting there watching other guys play the game.
I would like to give Russ just one piece of advice. I played three sound bites from him. And in one of them, he used the phrase at the end of the day twice, and he used it once in each of the other two sound bites. He's got to lose at the end of the day, Dave.
Well,
I hate that phrase.
We all have our crutches, except for you. You know, I don't know if mine's you know, or yeah, I hear in terms of a lot of times, mm-hmm. You know, everybody has their little crutches. So I'll give him a break on that.
My crutch is Cool Whip.
Yeah, your crutch is pronouncing the H's unnecessarily in certain words.
You have to go do your show now, don't you?
Yeah,
you're
I do.
Leaving us?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Give us a song, Sean, so we can have a winner this week.
Dory got it. Wow.
Darn it. Teenage Wasteland.
Yes, it is.
Nice call. You
all
win.
Right. You can hear Dave Wyman every afternoon, 710 ESPN Seattle. Appreciate you coming by, Dave.
Thanks,
Thank
Dory.
You. Okay. And we have lots more to come as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. I gotta get hold of Tracy Taylor for the coronavirus update, because I haven't heard this story covered at all. An Iranian cleric, an Ayatollah in Iran, claims the COVID-19 vaccine turns people into homosexuals, which is then punishable by death in Iran. Ayatollah Abbas Tabrizian, he made the claims on a social media platform. I think it's funny that Ayatollahs are on social media. I just never pictured that. But Ayatollah Abbas Tabrizian made the claims Tuesday on the social media platform Telegram, according to the Jerusalem Post. He wrote, "Don't go near those who have had the COVID vaccine." He has 210,000 followers on social media, by the way. "Do not go near those who have had the COVID vaccine. They have become homosexuals," he claimed. And so I don't know if I don't think any of this is true, but he is an Ayatollah. So you can take that with a grain of salt if you want. And then we have this woman. Now, if you were listening yesterday, Nicole told all of us that she is flying to Chicago this weekend, renting a car, and then driving to Indiana so that she can get her hair done by her friend who did her hair for years and years and years and has now moved to Indiana and is about the only person who has figured out how to tame Nicole's curly hair. Is that an accurate assessment of what you're doing this weekend, Nicole?
Yes. I mean, I also like to see her, but yes,
online
for my hair. Mm-hmm.
Have you tried what this Tessica Brown tried?
No. And I don't plan to.
Well, and I'm not recommending this either. I'm not worried about the vaccine changing your you know, who and what you are. And I would suggest against this as well. A Louisiana woman named Tessica Brown, she's very upset. Now she's threatening to sue the folks at Gorilla Glue because she had run out of hairspray, but she had an aerosol can of Gorilla Glue, which is a very powerful adhesive, and she sprayed Gorilla Glue in her hair, and she has been trying for a couple of weeks now to get it out, but nothing happened. She's tried shampooing it. She's tried other products. She's gone on the web to see what would work, and her hair is just plastered. It's like Reggie Mantle's hair. It's just plastered against her scalp. And Tessica's very, very upset. And her hair just won't move after she sprayed it with Gorilla Glue.
Hey, y'all. For those of y'all that know me, know my hair has been like this for about a month now. It's not by choice. No, it's not by choice. When I do my hair, I like to, you know, finish it off with a little Got to Be Glue spray. You know, just to keep it in place. Well, I didn't have any more Got to Be Glue spray, so I used this. Gorilla Glue spray. Bad idea. Y'all, look, my hair, it don't move. You hear what I'm telling you? It don't move. I've washed my hair 15 times. And it don't move. Stiff wear. Woo! My hair. So I'm going to tell y'all like this. If you ever run out of Got to Be Glue spray, don't ever use this. Unless you want your hair to be like that.
So that's just a public service announcement. Don't use Gorilla Glue as hairspray. Glad we can help.
We'll
check the news and then the big lead, too. Tell me in the big lead. Next.